Hello, and welcome back to AML Kensoku, episode 75. We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer Otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kensoku are...
I'm Sam.
Hey, y'all, I'm Mike.
Hey, I'm Nick.
And I am tonight's host, Dylan. This episode is being recorded on the 11th of December, 2025. Today, we will be discussing independent trips that Sam and Dylan took to Japan over November and December. So there'll be a lot of various ramblings about things that way. And with that, I say Hashin. So, we had not coordinated up our trips, but Sam and I ended up in Japan, in Tokyo, at the same time, because that's the only place that we have met in the last, 10 years or so was there. Yeah. And then when we also were randomly both happened to be on the island of Kauai for independent things at exactly the same time, too. So,
yeah, that's the way
it
is.
Say that. It's just the way it is.
You're only allowed to meet in small island small nations. World. That's just how it is.
Yes.
It's fate.
Yep. Without scheduling ahead of time.
Yeah.
But that was fun. So we met up for an evening and got some monjayaki and then walked around I forget the name, but it's in Tokyo, the park that's kind of just south of the Imperial Park Garden. Around the north end of Ginza. So that's completely aside there. So I figure let's just kind of start with some various travel notes and stuff. And if we want to have this be things that are either useful or interesting and let it kind of run where it does as usual here. So my trip, I went with my wife, and she is a super S tier type A planning person.
You're perfect for each other.
So she went super crazy in all this stuff, and we took advantage of a whole lot of various points for things, such that we were able to get a nonstop flight on JAL, as it's pronounced. I always thought in the US it was JAL, but everyone over there calls it JAL. Nonstop business class from JFK to Haneda on one of their brand new Airbus. It's not a Boeing. It's a plane that'll get you there. brand new Airbus plane. And I've never flown that way before. And now going that far, I'm like, I never not want to fly that way again.
How long was that? Because, JFK to Tokyo.
It was going there. It was, I think it was 14 and a half hours in the air.
Dang.
The flight route is really interesting. It's one of those great circle routes, but it goes from JFK, and we literally go far north over Hudson Bay in Canada and then pass over really far north in up way far north in Alaska and come down nearly over Kamchatka. So you're almost come straight down, kind of almost over Hokkaido and kind of run down the Pacific Ocean side of Japan. So if you draw that great circle route, that's kind of what it was.
That's cool.
I wonder if that's a jet stream efficiency sort of thing.
I think it's just
there's all those plane. Yeah, it's the great circle routes. I thought I remember there are. I think they're basically they're the shortest routes that you get between points on a globe.
Right.
When I did my Okinawa trip, they drew the great circle route on the map, but then as it was going, they weren't quite flying the great circle route. It seemed like they were cutting across more. That seemed kind of strange. I don't know how often that happens.
I felt like it was a little bit similar on the route that we had. It didn't look like we actually went over Russian airspace. But the seats and everything were pretty sweet. They had full lay down, lie flat. We had like a separate, basically the seats we were in were big enough to have two people, like, but it was like you had one area to have your stuff laid out and the other part to lay out, because they alternated the seats left, right, such that the person behind you was kind of like, you were, if I was on the inside of the pair of seats, the person behind me was on the outside, such that when they did their feet forward, it was kind of in the under part of where my place to set stuff was.
I think Jal does, or not Jal, Zip
that's,
does.
Yeah, that's how Zip's was when I went last year. It's kind of diagonally staggered, like zippered, so that, yeah, like your rest, armrest and your nook area was basically where the feet of the passenger before behind you go.
Yeah. So that was super nice. They had nice, like, it was like a 28-inch, like, touchscreen with a bunch of movies. So I watched the new Naked Gun movie. And I'll say, if you haven't seen that movie yet, just, it's chef's kiss. It should win Best Picture. It's it's delicious. And then they also had some other stuff. So I watched a new Japanese psychological horror movie called Dollhouse, which was quite good. So if you're looking for a new Japanese psychological horror movie, Dollhouse, quite good movie.
They had a lot of random stuff on their in-flight thing, including like 4 episodes of Frasier or whatever. It was weird. I just went through the whole thing and just flipped through every single page when I was, because I also flew JAL in a commoner economy section.
Poverty class, got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, poverty class. Yes, exactly. That's the right
poverty
word.
Class.
Yeah. And yeah, they have, there's a lot of stuff on their in-flight thing. American stuff, Japanese stuff, I think some other Asian things. And yeah, just a lot of weird random things, including like weird stuff with like flight attendants and like short video programs.
Yeah, I watched a bunch of those short videos on like JAL Cargo and like all this other stuff. Yep.
Like so educational really videos, just about.
Kind of promotional, educational, kind of one of those crossover ones that airline companies produce to show how cool they are.
I mean, JAL is pretty cool, so.
Definitely.
Still interesting they put that on the in-flight.
Yeah. So, where was you, Sam? Where was your flight from?
My flight was from SFO. SFO to, oh, okay.
To Narita. To Narita, okay. Yeah. Let's see, I'm trying to not spending too long on that part, but the business class stuff was... Like, it was pretty nice. The one bad thing was that for whatever reason, my wife's screen got, like, weirded out and, like, it was, like, resetting on its own a whole bunch. And then they got into, like, deep into the manuals, like, resetting stuff to where it almost, like, they basically, like, reset my stuff. And then for a while, like, my chair was, like, broken, so they're like, we can manually move it, but we can't actually, like, you can't actually use the controls to, like, lay it flat or anything.
What the heck?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Sometimes things, technological things like that from my wife just decide to explode.
And that was business class. Oh.
Yeah, but they did give us, like, they went through, like, oh, like, you don't have your, like, your reading lamp, because the whole, like, control system was all just, like, dead. They're like, oh, reading lamp doesn't work. And so they gave us, like, each... a coupon thing for that, and they're like, oh, chair doesn't work, coupon thing at a different like rate, and then another thing of like screen doesn't work, and basically it was either like money or points, and I think in total between the two of us, like, it's gonna be like, because I think we're gonna take the points, it's basically like 2 years to use them. Mm-hmm. But it's like 80,000 points or something, which is basically enough for like a business class like ticket.
Are you serious?
On points.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of points, which is like, it sucked there, but they came back and they're like, oh, here, we want to try and, you know, they didn't really say, we're trying to make this right. They're just like, here you go. And it was clear it was from their formula. It's like, this is out of here. You get either, you could either get X amount of money or X amount of points.
Oh, well, I guess you're going back to Japan in 2 years.
In a couple of years.
Yeah. Yep. Aside from that, yeah, the business class stuff was very nice. Like, they have separate lines and queues and stuff going through check-in.
You got to go and do the left door instead of the right side of the tunnel.
Yep. Got to go to the non-poverty door.
Oh, actually, I do want to ask you a flying thing. Yes. This is more on the way back, so I don't know if you want to talk about it later, but did you do the...
No, let's do it.
They have this facial recognition thing for at the Japan Airlines, at the air... they had it at Narita, basically. What they called it, Face Express. Did you do that?
I don't... I saw the thing... I know what you're talking about. They had it at Haneda coming back, but we weren't paying attention to it, so we didn't... You had to, like, sign up for it or something like that.
Yeah.
So we didn't do it, but we did see, and they did have it there. There's a lot more of that stuff going on. Well, so I would say, let's...
Well, I did it, and I just want to say it didn't really make a difference. The only difference it made is because most people didn't do it. There was a special line when boarding the plane for people who did the Face Express, and it was shorter because most people didn't do it. Otherwise, the sales pitch was like, when going through security, you don't have to like show your boarding pass or your passport or anything. You just like do the face scanning thing and you walked over to security. But in reality, they still wanted to see your passport. And then once you're past the thing, you still had to like scan your passport. So like, it didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. It's just the short line. So it was neat, but.
Yeah, a couple. I'm trying to think of a couple other useful notes there. And maybe this is all stuff that everybody knows, but let's put it out there. Like, if you get to the official Japan site, there's a bunch of fake ones. Don't go to those. You can basically pre-register your entry. Oh, yeah. Customs forms.
Yeah, that's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That with COVID. Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely a nice saver there. Another interesting thing, at least at Haneda, that the baggage check pickup, like, you know, get your bags to leave, was actually like inside security, and it was all the stuff where it was like, no, you can't like re-enter baggage claim from outside.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was a little bit interesting. I was kind of like, huh.
This common, I mean, it's the same thing at Narita. I think it's because, you know, your stuff has to go through customs, basically.
No, it wasn't going through. I mean, at least it wasn't going through like anything there. Maybe it is that because of the way they run it, but I thought it was interesting. I was like, oh, you can't come back in here to get it, but maybe you're right. Maybe I just didn't realize that was what was going on.
Because you didn't you have to do your declaration form thing on the way out once you got your bags?
No, I don't think we had to do anything there. I think we literally just like grabbed our bags and walked out and got on the monorail.
Oh, I had to go through. You're talking about, this is from international, right? Landing international.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because. Yeah, I had to do that. I didn't have any bags, but obviously I had to go through the baggage claim area. And yeah, I had to go through this like customs thing. It used to be there was a person, and
maybe I did.
Yeah,
maybe I did, and I'm just say, it was.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm like, I probably did, and I'm just spacing out.
Yeah, that's pretty standard for Japan. You were saying, Sam, so it wasn't a person anymore.
So there were two areas, and basically, if you did the online thing, they wanted you to use the machine now. Well, last time they didn't have that.
Interesting.
Yeah, which was a long line.
People are not intuitive for most people, I assume. So probably was a steep learning curve.
Yeah, I guess. It's weird. It should have been. In theory, it can be very fast. So I like it in principle, but in actual execution, it was just a really long line.
Yeah, because I don't remember the customs interview for us when we went last year being particularly long with the person. Like, once we figured out where we had to go, it was pretty quick. Like, the lines are moving relatively quick.
Yeah, and just to be clear, this is the second part, right? Because there's the first one where I definitely had to see a person for that one. But I just scanned the QR code thing. But like after that, I got my luggage, or, you know, after you would get your luggage, because I didn't have luggage. But then there was the customs things where there's a second part where they may or may not choose to inspect your stuff closer.
Yeah. I've experienced that before.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyways.
So most important question, when you went to enter, did they say sightseeing, and did you correctly answer no combat?
No.
He wanted to enter the country, so I assume.
Yeah. I didn't want to get arrested right away.
Every single time, I just can't help stop running this scene from Pat LaVar 1 in my head and just being like, oh, sightseeing, like, no. Combat.
You have to go in.
Be like,
coolest thing you could possibly say if you don't actually care about getting into the country.
Yep.
And you have to have sunglasses on that you take off perfectly as well.
Just go with your phone with the clip on it. Hold it up as you do it and point to the screen as you say it. And maybe you can get away with it.
They might not. If they're Pat Labor fans, they'll probably give you the thumbs up. Otherwise, you're getting tackled.
That's right.
Otherwise, they'll give you the OTA treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
So we definitely had luggage. We had two suitcases that we tried to keep relatively low, relatively light packed coming in. To get in from Haneda, we took the monorail out to the end of the line for that, which is like the Shimbashi station for the Yamanote, and then we had to take that like one stop north. That was kind of a pain in the butt. The monorail part itself was nice and easy and everything, but the transfer at the, I think it was Shimbashi, was kind of a mess because that station is getting like redone right now. So it has like hardly any standing room. And we also got in at like 5:30 PM on like a Friday night.
Yeah,
that's so. I mean, it sucks, but like honestly, that's on you guys for just booking it that way.
Yeah,
because trust me when I say you have no idea the luxury you had of being able to land in Haneda versus going from Narita. Because you think going from Haneda into central Tokyo is bad, going from Narita is so much worse.
I don't know, man. Time wise, it's way worse. But like I ride so. I stay in Ueno every time, and so I ride the Skyliner, the Keisei Skyliner, which goes directly to Ueno, and I just get off, and then I go to my hotel. I have, like, no dealing with JR. I don't want to deal with JR at all.
You're, like, a pro, though. Like, you have that mapped out.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
for the rest of the people that kind of have to do, like, it's just because, like, all the trains going into Tokyo proper is just nothing but people with tons of luggage, and it's just such chaos for like an hour's worth of train ride. So I think being able to land in Haneda is definitely like a pretty nice luxury, because one, it's way closer, and two, there's way less transferring you gotta worry about.
It is a nicer airport too, like,
but
overall,
given Dylan's situation, I completely understand, because landing like peak rush hour on a Friday during a construction zone was probably pretty tough with all the luggage you had.
Yeah, it wasn't the worst. We were also just, you know, tired from kind of sleeping on the plane, but not sleeping great. And all the time shift and everything else there.
Did you? But I will say, when you got on the I'm assuming you rode the Yamanote. But when you got on it, did you?
Yeah.
Did you do the like maybe the next train will have less people thing?
Oh, we definitely did that. Yeah, the first train we tried to get on was literally, it was also, I don't know if it was just like Friday or if something had been delayed, but it was literally like completely packed full, which is pretty odd for the Yamanote.
What? No, so, I would say that's, at that time, like if you're on any of the rush hours.
Peak rush hour, that's super normal. That's totally normal. That's why my wife and I, we intentionally made sure that we had to do long train transit on any of the major lines, that we did it off. like morning rush and evening rush. Otherwise, it was always pretty packed, sardine canned.
And we were it was one of those things where I kind of looked at it and like we were looking at other options. Like from Haneda, there's the airport limousine, which is basically just bus. That one's actually, we did amongst many stuff. We flew into Haneda again from Fukuoka, and from there we went directly to Disneyland Hotel. And if you're going somewhere where the airport limousine goes, like, it's a pretty nice option because it's literally like the pickup is like directly outside the terminal. So you just walk up.
Nice.
You can buy your tickets. Like, you have to buy your tickets 5 minutes before the bus leaves. So you don't have to like buy them hours and ahead of time. You can pretty much get there. And when you're waiting for your luggage, you can just like buy the ticket and be like, okay, luggage should be here in like 5 minutes. Let's get the bus in like 15. And then they have like all the underbus space. So if you have a bunch of luggage and they're going somewhere you want to go, it's a great option. That didn't work for us because our hotel was like Ginza, the first one, and they weren't going there. But going to Disney, it was awesome. Like super easy.
How much did that cost you?
I think it was like 2,000 yen a person or something like that.
Oh man, that's great. Jeez.
Yeah. No, super, yeah, like pretty reasonable, tons of buses. It's kind of continuing this on the way back when we were returning to the US, we had our suitcases were using the luggage scale up to the maximum US. Well, we actually, because we were business class, we could have taken up to like 35 kilograms per bag, which is like 75 pounds or something, but we had to transfer in the US to go at JFK from JFK to Buffalo. So there we were on a domestic carrier, which had the 50 pound limit. So we had two bags that were strictly at literally exactly 50.0 pounds. And then we had purchased an additional like 65 liter duffel bag that was also about like 30 pounds.
Yeah. So you just crammed all your laundry in that one, right?
Yep, pretty much. Yep. Yeah. It was good. There was actually a nicer pickup than going for the suitcase, just easier to just toss around. But what we did there is from our hotel, which was a different one, but in Ginza, is we just got a taxi from there to Haneda, which was lovely because it was like roughly 8,000 yen.
What?
To go from Ginza to Haneda.
Oh, Ginza.
Like,
okay.
And we didn't have to deal with, like, luggage or anything there. And it was, you know, point to point. We weren't going at a peak travel time getting out. But that was nice.
Any of those times where you're, like, going to do a big travel with all your stuff, like, yeah, you don't want to deal with any of that BS. Like, yeah. Pay the money and make it go away.
And like, it's not that bad. Like, we'd use the luggage forwarding service several times as well. The one time we didn't was when we were leaving from the Disney hotel and going back to Tokyo to Disney, to Ginza, a different, you know, Ginza's right around the Tokyo area, Tokyo station side of stuff. We looked at doing the luggage forwarding there, but they were still saying it wasn't going to be like same day.
Ew.
And then we're like, because stuff was, we had like three bags or something and things were heavy, so we're like, honestly, I think it's going to be cheaper to just get a taxi from Disney to the hotel.
Well, you have to get lucky enough to find a van taxi, because that sounds like you had three pretty big luggages.
They weren't huge, but that was a question, and particularly because we were out at Disney, like every taxi that's out there is a van taxi.
Okay.
But we also made sure to ask at the hotel, same as when we were going to Haneda. We like let them know ahead of time. We're like, hey, we're going to be heading out an hour. We need like one that can carry like three bags, and they're like, okay, because we definitely had that same thought, because so many of the taxis there are just like.
Sedans.
Like a small little sedan.
So how much was that one? That sounds like it'd be pretty expensive.
That one was Actually, about the same. That one was about 8,000 yen. Yeah.
Wow.
No, it wasn't. It was not too bad.
Distance probably wasn't too bad, though, right? Like going from Tokyo to.
It was about. It was a both of like, each of those trips rough were actually about a half an hour each.
Oh, okay. I guess I think about how long it takes by train to get out to Disney, and it takes a while.
Yeah, because you had to go all over.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was, I think we spent quite a while there on getting in and out there. So I guess I'll open up for any other kind of plane or initial in and out questions or follow-ups or anything else or on flights or...
Not for you, but I actually wanted Sam's perspective because not by intention, but like you two took very different like travel methodologies going there. Like, you know, Dylan, you and your wife were like, for all intents and purposes, balling out on this vacation is I'm using it, you know, loosely.
That's a technical term. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Whereas Sam, you were kind of trying to like challenge mode yourself because you actually didn't travel with any luggage, right? Just like a small carry-on, like a backpack. Bag. Yeah. And then you tried to see how like I'm surprised you didn't just like vlog this, but yeah. So what was the experience like of going in with basically nothing and trying to like, you know, stay in Japan for you. You're there a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah. I will say traveling with just a backpack is awesome.
I bet.
The problem, but I guess when I compare it to luggage, it's not really, but like the kind of the stuff that you accumulate kind of starts to dangle off you. So like I was carrying I managed to keep everything in my backpack and I had like room to like grow it vertically a little bit. But like, yeah, let's just say it was great. There was problems getting home though, because I did bring a second bag and I kind of wasted space having a duffel bag packed into my backpack.
Mm.
But I didn't end up using it. So it
was, you just kept it packed in your backpack the whole time.
Yeah. And it did keep me from like maybe buying some stuff that I would have bought otherwise, just because I didn't feel like dealing with it. But I don't know. It seems worth it. I go often enough that I, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably the most experienced Japan traveler in the group by a comfortable margin. Like, you seem to go quasi-annually, right? Like,
at this point, yeah. It's been annual.
So, yeah. So how many days worth of clothes were you packing?
Oh, so this is the kind of interesting thing that I did is I did this last time too, where actually last two times where I would go with just enough for a few days and then I would kind of buy what I needed extra, like, because I was like, I know I'm going to want to buy some t-shirts,
so you just wore them.
So I just wore them. I'd buy them and then wear them.
That's cool.
Yeah. And as I was able to find enough, like, mostly I was just wearing, I this time because it was cold, I actually brought a single pair of pants and a pair of shorts, and I just wore the pants the whole time. I didn't even wash them. And that was fine. Everything else I would run through the washing machine. But yeah.
One of the things that we did with that, because, you know, my wife, she likes to have more stuff, and we weren't trying to go. We were going definitely more bougie, less proletariat. But we were originally going to be doing like, hey, she had planned places and stuff for doing laundry, whereas like, yeah, this hotel is supposed to have stuff there. And then, you know what? We ended up feeling fine and taking advantage of the good exchange rate, and we just paid the hotels to do laundry for us. And nice. It was nice. Wonderful. It was lovely.
If you don't mind me asking, like, well, because Alex and I were thinking about doing that, but at least the hotel we were at in Osaka, like, we were like, excuse me, when we saw the rates, and then we found that there was a coin laundry like two blocks away, so we just went to that. So I'm just curious what the prices were for you guys.
They were probably up there. Like, I think we paid, like, you pay a lot for doing.
Definitely. For sure.
It's for doing hotel laundry. It's one of those things you're like, all right, is it worth doing that versus like the time and managing and doing a coin laundry thing there? So I think We did laundry like 3 times. One of the times we actually got for free at the hotel we were staying at, they just like did the laundry for us and didn't charge us because it was already a fancy. It was like a super nice ryokan.
Makes sense.
But the other two, I think total, I could be wrong, but my gut is like total between the two things was something like probably like under $200 US.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I would expect it to be.
Like, it's not free, but it's one of those things where you're like, okay, like, yeah. And they were able to get it, like back to us, like either, it was either like, if you get it to them early enough, like either same day or like the next day.
That's nice.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. So, like Japanese, that for high-end hotel Japanese service, that does not surprise me at all. So
yeah, I can't justify it, but I can see how it could be justified for sure. That you had a lot of stuff, think, for the right kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think if I were going on my own and doing it, I would probably be more Sam style, and just be like, yeah, I don't know, I just get a pair of pants and like, yeah, getting some t-shirts or whatever, and like bring like a nice shirt or something, and kind of be like, oh, not plan on it, but like, all right, if something happens to get dirty, then be like, maybe I just overpay a little bit there and get it cleaned, and I don't have to like derail myself for 3 hours to do laundry.
You know, speaking of, you said bring a nice shirt. I did bring one nice shirt just in case, but I didn't realize
what.
Well, in case I had to go to somewhere like nice-ish and I wanted to, you know, dress up a little bit. And I didn't realize, I have a polo shirt that's pretty nice. It's Lacoste. It's the alligator one, you know, so like generally they're pretty nice. I really like it. It's a hand-me-down, so I never paid anything for it. But I'd forgotten when I packed it how ratty it is. So like, I get it and I'm wearing this thing and it's like, I do not look dressed up at all. it's like frayed around the collar and stuff. And there's like a, like the buttoned up stuff shows some of the like stiffening fabric out through the, it's like, oh my gosh, I look like a hobo.
So why was that a thing that you decided to bring rather than buying something if you realized you were going out to a nicer place?
Well, I didn't ever think that I would go out and buy a nicer thing. That's definitely not something I would do. I did bring my backup nicer thing was I brought my Hawaiian shirt, my Kariyushi that I got when I was in Okinawa, but I didn't end up wearing that either because that was, it's too cold. Too nice and too cold. So like those two
situations. Actually, you break up. So like, I've never traveled to Japan in autumn. So like, what was the weather like in general? Just especially, I guess for Dylan, because you went everywhere. So what was your? I mean, you live in the literal inverse of hell. So during the winter, so I guess everything is pleasant for you, but. You know, being that you grew up in California, like, what was your perception of a proper autumn over in Japan?
At least while we were there, like, the weather was perfect. It was like, I think during the days, it was like up in like the 60s, nights down in like the 40s. While we were there, it really didn't like rain hardly at all. And there were sometimes there was a little windy. There was a couple days where like, we felt a little bit chilled, but like it was probably also because we were just wearing like a shirt, like a sweater, and then just like a very light like windbreaker jacket thing.
And you also started going south, right, as your trip progressed.
Yeah. And then we came back up to Tokyo, but that's not like, honestly, I think probably the coldest we got was when we were sitting around outside waiting for like the evening parades at Disney.
Oh yeah,
because it's like 7 at night and you're not like, if you're moving it's like you're fine, but like you're just like sitting there in your spot for like half an hour or so and just like okay,
and you're right on the bay, so you're getting that chill bay air.
Yeah, so you're getting that honestly was probably like the most chilled we got, and even there it was just kind of like Yeah, I mean, the weather, I think, was just, yeah, it was lovely.
Yeah, same for me. I went up to, I think I went higher elevation than you did, maybe. Although I don't know what you did in the south, but you were in the south too. So I was, the coldest place I was at was in Matsumoto, which is basically just south of Nagano. And I woke up one morning and it was 2C. I don't remember what that is.
Yeah, chilly.
Yeah.
So, it's about 30, 36 or so.
Yeah. So that was like the absolute coldest it ever was.
That's pretty cold.
I mean, that's,
for sure.
That's chilly. Yep.
But, you know, it during the day, you know, it would go up pretty high. So, you know, similarly, I think when I was there, it was like maybe in the 60s still. And obviously when I was in Tokyo, it was going to be a little bit warmer than you because it was earlier. But yeah, it was like 70s. Like low 70s.
Okay, let's see here. Other stuff that's here. Mike, you have any travel questions on anything this way or anything else that's gotten you?
Not right now. Just
all right,
pondering sitting in uncomfortable seats for 10, 15 hours, but I'll cross that bridge when I get there.
See, I'm curious about, so you guys planned pretty heavily, but from talking to you, while we were eating, you guys had this, you do the kind of thing that I like to do, which is like find a bunch of stuff. And then while you're there, kind of in the moment, pick stuff you want to do. And I'm curious how often you kind of went off that script. And what kind of cool surprises did you find?
There was a lot of, like, I definitely, I think, particularly being over there, I like to have less stuff planned and just kind of, like, meander about and find mm-hmm. stuff. Probably, like, it was one of the nicest finds was, like, our first day, you know, like, so we were there, we woke up at, like, 4 a.m. or whatever, So we went up to Asakusa and we got up there around like 7 a.m. and it was like pretty much dead. Like nobody was there, which was nice because we were able to walk around and do pictures and stuff like that. And then we were kind of walking around in the neighborhood area behind there and we just randomly happened on a couple of old obasans that were running like a Oden shop that was literally just only locals out on the street. It looked like just straight up Showa era. And we got it was our first time having the simmered beef tendon Oden, which sounds, it's one of those things you're like, simmered beef tendon. I don't know about that. but let me tell you people, if you get a chance to have simmered beef tendon Oden, you take that chance.
When it's simmered long enough, it basically like, turns into like delicious beef jelly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, oh my God. So that was just like a random thing that we walked on. And we were forced in a couple other spots where like that same day we were all over the place that day, but like we were back in Akihabara and we had a couple of places that, you know, food places, and my wife from whatever various YouTubes or blogs or whatever she'd found put on the thing. And like the first one we went was actually a little bit more in Akihabara than we thought it was. And it had just like a ridiculous line, like out the door, like looked like we were going to be waiting for like an hour and a half. We're like, this is stupid. There's no point to waiting for a line for that long. So there was another place that was kind of across the street, but then it got busy and we were losing our mind. And so we have walked down to like another place that was on our list that was down in Kanda, so kind of a little bit further out. We're like, all right, maybe this one will be all right. It's definitely further out. And we got there. That one also had a huge line. That line looked to be more Japanese than tourist, but it had a huge line as well. And we're like, oh my God. So we're walking back and forth and then we're just like, screw it. And then like, we saw this like curry spot and we just like went in there and we got some delicious, actually like kind of like Japanese Indian style curry. From a place that specialized in that, and it was quite good.
Nice.
I don't know if I've answered that question at all, but like,
no, that's good. Yeah, that's kind of stuff I'm looking for. Nice, fun surprises like that.
Yeah, like, we kind of.
So, what was like? You named a bunch, but like, if you had to pick, like, what was your favorite food experience?
Favorite food experience? Oh my god, I don't.
Maybe
like,
maybe do,
much
maybe
like
do
half,
a top three maybe. So I favorite probably
top
stuff,
top but. Top few things. Yeah. Sure. So I think that street Oden was quite good because it was literally just all locals sitting there at like 8. This was like 8 a.m. in the morning, and like they're all sitting there, and everyone had their Asahis, and I was like, heck yeah, I'm having a beer. And then the Obasan started talking and asking, like, oh, what are you doing? And, you know, I was my kind of my first chatting in Japanese. That one was good. We stayed at a very fancy ryokan out in the out in Kumamoto, out around Mount Aso, down mm-hmm. in Kyushu. Mm-hmm. Every meal there was completely over the top. Like, we stayed there two nights. Like, we wouldn't have wanted to stay less, and if we had stayed more, we might have actually just started like vomiting up the food because there was just so much. And we're just like, we have to eat it, we don't want to be rude, and it's so good, but oh my god, we're gonna die.
Jeez.
So that was super crazy. And then another one just comes to my mind as we went down to Yakushima, which is at this point known as kind of like the Mononoke Forest Island. And we got into just like a little local izakaya place there. And it was, they had, I think my wife said it might have been the best kara age she's ever had. And she's a big kara age fan. And they even had like the I forget the Japanese name, but they had the basically like the raw chicken sashimi stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah, we got some of that, and it was just like a super nice local place with super tasty food. And they were just like, we were there like a couple minutes before they opened, and then we walked in, and then after we left they were just like, all right, we're closing up for the night. Okay. It's like, because it's out in Yakushima, so they're kind of like, yep, we had the, you know, whatever, the 6 or 8 tables worth of people, and that's it. Yep, we're done.
Yeah, it's so crazy the way how they do that. It's so unheard of out here.
Yeah, where it's just kind of like, yeah, what do you do? We open up at like 5 and it's like 8, and they're just like, yeah, we're done. Okay, we're good.
Eight. Wow, that's late.
It's late. You know, it was probably more like 6:30 or 7 or something, and we were literally like cashing out, and they're just like, all right, we're closing up, we're done. It's like no one else is coming in. So those are three that came to my mind right now. I could probably come up with 3 different ones tomorrow.
Yeah, I have 2 food things that are interesting. Like you, maybe more if I thought about it, that I had a truly horrendous food experience that in Fukui they have these, it's Oroshi Soba is a thing that they do there. And I went to this place that was like kind of famous for it. It's like a department store kind of restaurant. So, you know, it's like not fancy or whatever, but you know.
Your bog standard, like, department store, family yeah. sit-down place, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was disgusting. I hate it. I can't eat it. It's the, because it's, like, grated yam. It's, like, so it's cold, flat soba noodles, which I love. I love zaru soba. But they gave me 3 dipping sauces, and the idea is that the dipping broth things have grated, some grated yam, I think it is, in them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's so bitter. It's so, so bitter.
Yeah, when it's raw, yeah, it's really, really bitter. Like, Japanese yam like that, when it's raw, can be pretty...
Yeah.
Pretty off-putting. Also, the texture is super, super slimy, so it's also...
Yeah, it is. That doesn't bother me as much. Also, I had one of the dipping things was wasabi-flavored, and I got a big old mouthful of that, which basically... Then all the rest of them, everything tasted like wasabi after that. don't recommend. But I did have sauce katsu, Oh man, that was amazing. I don't know how they do it, but it's like it's got the sauce like in the
I know what you're talking about. What they do is they slice everything's all the meat super thin, and in between other they paint on sauce and they stack it, and then they bread it and fry it. So when you bite in, it's just this flavor bomb of juicy, delicious pork. And yeah, I've had it. It's
so good.
It is really good. Yeah. I mean, katsu in Japan in general is just better. It's because just the ingredients they use are better. The pork there is better.
Yep.
The panko is always fresh, so like it crisps up super nice. So yeah.
But sauce katsu was like a whole other experience. I mean, like you say, they're all amazing, and I would take katsudon in a heartbeat at any of these places. But sauce katsu, definitely recommend anybody go seek that out.
Yeah, we got that when we were in Nagoya when we were there for a night. I think that's where the sauce katsu place is.
Yeah, that general region.
Let's see. I'm thinking of it. Just a couple of the random. Transporting around, it took us three on the third try. We finally bought the correct set of Shinkansen tickets.
Oh, what? What happened?
I hadn't ever been on Shinkansen before, done it, but like, so we didn't realize that you had to get like the two different tickets because we wanted the reserve car. So you need to get the ticket for the thing, and just like we were doing it at the ticket box thing. Yeah, we did went to the machine. We found it was just like, it was a little bit confusing. We're like, I don't know. Do I need this other thing? I was like, okay. So we didn't have that at first. And like the first time we did it, we were trying to get on because we had like reserved seats and we were running like super late because didn't figure our way through Tokyo Station. So we went around.
That's a tough one.
And then we go to try to scan in, and then the guy at the gate, because the ticket was like, gave us red. He's like, you need another ticket. We're like, what? What are you talking about? You're crazy. We already bought the ticket. But somehow we managed to get that and get on the train. Like, ran. It was stupid. We were not happy with ourselves. But
when you say scan, did you do the QR code thing?
No. I think we just had the tickets there. So, and then the second time we were like, all right, well, we're not going to get caught without having tickets, so we accidentally bought like the first single ticket that has both like the seat and the area, and then we bought a second one for the area.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a second ticket or something, and so they're like, oh, we'll go through, and then we got out, then they're like, no, you have to go to the thing to get your money back.
Your money back?
So, yeah, because we had like bought too many tickets.
What? How many did you have? Did you have three?
Well, basically, because we had bought the one ticket, but it had both the seat and the area on it. And then we bought a second one that had the area on it. And we didn't realize that the first one we had bought had the seat and the area.
Where did you buy that? Did you buy that at the machine?
I think so, yeah.
So, for the first time, because the last time I was in Japan, Japan proper, not Okinawa, I had a rail pass like right before they raised the prices. So this is my first time actually dealing with buying tickets, and I didn't want to go to the counter and just have them do it for me, because I don't know, it's just got a more interesting experience. And so I was using the machine like you, and I made a similar mistake where I went to go buy my Shinkansen ticket, and it asked me about the regular fare, and the thing that threw me off is I was using the English instructions, because I don't want to deal with this kind of stuff when I'm under pressure, like trying to translate Japanese.
Yeah, I agree.
Like I was looking at it, and the language they used was, it was something like, only buy regular fare. And it was almost to me as like, don't do this. And so I was like, okay, I won't do that. Jeez. And so like I went and got the whatever I did, what I thought it was telling me to do, and it means I only bought the seats ticket, right? And I was missing one, and I realized it later as I was, but fortunately before, because I was doing this the night before, I realized this later, and I just went to the window and was like, hey, help me out. Sell me the regular ticket. And so what I figured out was that there's, when you buy at the machine, what you're buying is the express ticket. I forget what it's called, like the Tokutei something.
Limited.
Limited express ticket. That's what it is. Yeah. Limited express ticket. And then there, you buy the regular fare ticket to go with it. And you can use your like Suica for the regular fare, but like there's some mess where you have to like charge the Suica with the that special trip. And only some machines do that. I found that the ones behind the Shinkansen gates will actually do that, which didn't make any sense to me. But I didn't mess with that. I just bought regular paper tickets from the machines.
Yeah, sounds like you made the same mistake that we made the first time, but we did ours with a super time crunch, which was way not good.
Stressful. So, yeah. Dylan, question. So did you and your wife not do the JR pass then?
We did not.
Okay, so you were just doing individual a la carte ticketing for your travels.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Shinkansen routes we did was from Tokyo to Nagoya, and then from Nagoya to Kyoto, and then from Kyoto to Fukuoka.
Okay, Kyoto to Fukuoka is a long leg then.
Yeah, on the way back from Fukuoka up to Tokyo, we flew. It's so crazy. Like, there's like Fukuoka to Tokyo. Like, it was insane. It was in like a huge huge plane that was completely sold out, and it was one of like six flights that day between like Haneda and Fukuoka.
It's a super common route. Yeah. A lot.
Yeah. It was just like so crazy, like how many people were doing that.
Yeah. Cause you'll normally think about like planes in Japan, but yeah, there's tons of planes. I had a similar experience when I took a regular plane last time.
Oh, and interesting thing is, if you are flying domestic in Japan, the weight limitation for luggage is 20 kilograms, which is something like 44 pounds, which is less than the standard U.S. domestic, which is 50 pounds. But if you purchase the ticket, like JAL has a way that you can purchase tickets like completely independent of an actual international flight, like as a tourist, like ticket purchase thing, then they basically give you the 50 pound luggage rather than 20 kilograms.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And we didn't realize that because we were like, oh crap. We were trying to get stuff packed up the day before when we were flying. And we're like, oh crap, wait a minute. We have to get these down to 20 kilograms. Okay. And we're like, we made it work. And we're like, one of them was a couple kilograms over. Cause we're like, it's just gotta be whatever we'll pay. So we went up to the gate and the person was like, no, you're good. Like, you're fine. Like, this is international. You're like, no. Like, this was an independent ticket. We didn't purchase it as part of their return thing. They're like, no, you're fine. You purchased it as like a tourist ticket. And then my wife was like, oh, we did that. Okay. So just FYI.
That's cool. That's a neat tip.
Yep. 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 Let's see here. Cause we're actually close to running out of time. So might as well keep up with a little bit of this, transiting around things and, notes there that I have. Google Maps that's a crazy thing just as much here, but it's so nice over there for getting around and finding your way to anything.
Mm-hmm. It's super
It's insane.
Handy. Yeah.
Like, cause like 3/4 of the time we would come out of the station and go the wrong way, and then go about 50 yards and be like, nope, we turn around, other way.
Mm-hmm.
Just be like, nope, going the wrong way. Okay.
I will say, I do have to say, most people don't count out Apple Maps if that's your preferred thing. Every time I go, that's what I use, and it works great.
Are you? Okay.
Even with, like, train schedules
I was curious on that, too.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, the schedule, train schedules, all of those things is, like, it's insane. Another transit thing, we rented a car down in Kyushu and basically kind of drove around nearly all of Kyushu, starting in Fukuoka and kind of going counterclockwise down around kind of the whole island in and out and through. We had a nice Toyota Prius we had rented, at least with the Toyota stuff from like Toyota Rent-A-Car, which was super super easy getting the car. Like, I was expecting to have to go through like lots of bureaucracy and like literally none. It was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're putting in directions into like not into like the Toyota navigation thing.
Oh no.
And you have a phone number for the Japanese place, put in the phone number.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like 90% of the time, like you put in the phone number, it'll be there. Because other times we were trying to put in like a name of a thing, and we had the car was in like English mode, but then we're trying to like put in the names of stuff, and like it wasn't finding like anything. So we'd often like one of the other tricks we would use, like because there were a couple places we couldn't find the phone number or it wasn't registered, so we go look on like Google Maps on the phone, find a nearby Family Mart. On Google Maps, find the phone number for the Family Mart or whatever, put that in the Toyota thing, and the Family Marts are always on there, yeah. Registered as like, basically the phone number is effectively a geo point for them. And then it would just take you right there. So if you're doing that sort of thing, use phone number first. It was super helpful once we kind of realized to do that.
So did you not trust the Google Maps to navigate you there?
We were using the Toyota nav thing because we were just there and didn't feel like dealing with setting up the CarPlay navigation stuff. Okay. I think at some level we're kind of like we'll go with Toyota.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
If these directions are good enough for Toyota, they're good enough for us.
I would always, like, in the two times that I've done it, I think about it and then I think, no, I just throw my phone in the cup holder and put a headphone in and then do that. Just have it shout at me. But I should try that next time. Oh, actually, I do want to, when you got your car, did you get although it is all very nice, did you get the attendant with the see you walking up and get the flop sweat of like, oh no, I have to deal with the foreigner.
Oh, and then he breaks out the Android to
exactly. Do the translation. That's a translator thing. Yeah.
Not really. We picked up our car. That car we picked up at the like the Toyota rent a car, like the Hakata station one. So kind of like the main one there. And like we'd already pre-registered most stuff. So it was pretty much just like we went up to the kiosk, hit basically typed in our number, hit print. It printed out the stuff. Mm-hmm. We walked up to the attendant person and they're just kind of like they had a translated in like a.
Okay, so you went to like a main like one.
They had the translated thing of like of the rules of like, hey, reminder, don't do this, follow the signals, like drive on this side of the road. They're like, are you okay with that? Or is like, yes. They're like, okay, have fun. We also rented a car down in Yakushima. We did not use Toyota there because we were trying to use Toyota, but like their website was being super weird. So we used Nippon Car Rental, and like they were super nice and chill there too. And like I think a lot of like particularly like Yakushima and some of those places, like they're very much used to having non-Japanese people there. So they had it was not quite as fancy a machine setup as they had at the Hakata station, but it was a very similar process of, okay, here, get this. Hey, reminder, drive on this side of the road. Don't hit the monkeys. and they're pretty much like, okay. And then, like, they actually did the job that they're supposed to do that they don't do in the U.S., which is they actually walked around the car and, like, marked off all the scratches and everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had that with my last one with the Times, and I appreciated that. Actually, I guess Toyota did that for me, too.
And then as well, definitely they always offer it to you. But like if you're renting a car, like definitely get the ECC car, ETC card.
ETC. Okay. So did you use that? I guess.
Oh my God. Could... So much everywhere. Okay. Yeah. It was awesome.
We'll have to.
We spent.
So is that their like toll card system thing? Yeah. Yep.
It's kind of cool because it's literally like a credit card that has a insert thing in the car and you put it in and it tells you like ETC card inserted.
Oh, and so the car has a transponder built in and then you just have to activate it with the card basically. That's smart.
Yeah, so you put the card in and it's kind of nice because then when you go through a toll, it inside of the car reads out and it's like toll of 900 yen. So you actually know at that point how much the toll was. You're like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, so we drove all around Kyushu, like everywhere. And I think at the end of that, it was about like 10,000 yen of tolls.
Not bad.
Yeah. Which would have been the same cash or ETC. And ETC was way easier than trying to toss exact change into a machine.
I didn't even know they took cash at those things anymore.
Yeah, they still do have cash lanes.
Mm.
Makes sense. It's Japan. Yeah, maybe that's another thing to discuss later. Because I personally never would think about driving in a foreign country, just because even Japan, it's not something I feel comfortable with. But you know, now that you and Sam have both done it, maybe I'll, because obviously, especially going to like Western Japan is, you know, so much more reliant on a vehicle versus train, because it's so much more mountainous. So it's just hard to get trains there. So obviously, if you want to do more Western Japan traveling, it's going to be a necessity. But you make it sound way more accessible than IND, because obviously language competency will be less of an issue for me. But I'm just deathly afraid of like, whoops, I'm driving on the right side of the lane, silly me. But I mean, I don't know, maybe the context would help with the rewiring. But yeah, actually, that's something I'd really like to discuss next time.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good. So we definitely got through the entirety of everything in all trips. No, that's definitely not. So I think we'll come back with another episode. Next time you can look forward to what places should you boom out, which places should you not boom out. There's so much stuff on travel and food and all those things.
I also want to hear your input and your story about Ghibli Park, since, you know.
You
guys did that as well.
Yep, we got to Ghibli, we got to Disney, both land and sea. And then I think from my end perspective as well, I think I'd like to discuss some stuff of like, hey, like, cause it's nearly 20 years since I had been there. And like what stuff has changed and what stuff hasn't, and other opinions there. So we will, continue this discussion next time. Thanks for everyone for bearing with us over our fall hiatus. We'll be back as regularly as we ever have been. So with that, anything else from anyone?
Nope, not tonight.
All right, well, thanks for listening, and until next time, this is AMO Kenzoku saying Sadoba.